This week in the markets, gold, oil, and U.S. shares gained on positive trade talks between the U.S. and China. Your host, Chris Walczak, here with you on this September 14th, Season 13, Episode 661 edition, with another two big guest interviews lined up for you. Well, Hurricane Florence has made landfall in North Carolina and South Carolina. The threat of wind damage pulled back a bit, dropping to a Category 1, but that's still 90 mile per hour winds and huge storm surges, knocking out power to 500,000 residents so far, and rains of over 40 inches in certain areas on South Carolina and the Tar Heel State. More than 1 million residents have already been evacuated, moved to more safe areas to write up. So if you know anyone in the area, especially seniors or handicapable folks, be sure and reach out to them and offer shelter if possible. This week's guests include Peter Schiff, head of Schiff Gold, Euro Pacific Capital. He says gold has bottomed out and a new bull run is inevitable. We also discussed the gold to silver ratio, which makes silver an incredible opportunity, at least relative to gold. He sees better times ahead, and Arch Crawford returns from Crawford Perspectives. He also likes gold and makes a free offer to our folks here who get in touch with him. arch.ah.crawford@gmail.com. He'll send over a free report to you. And I'm giving away a free silver bar to the first 10 new subscribers to the Alpha Stocks newsletter. And if you sign up to a 5 or 10 year subscription, you'll also receive a gold bar along with it. So if you've been on the fence, be sure and sign up now. You can do so with PayPal. And we'd like to tackle your questions and comments at the Q&A hotline, 641-715-3900. Please jot this down on a post-it pad or plug it right into your phone, 641-715-3900. You'll need our mailbox number, 514049. 514049. Robert Ian wraps up the show with another must-hear report. GoldSeek.com radio begins now with a market weather recap. Sunny skies persisted over the precious metals this week, with gold holding support at $1,201 as the dollar pulled back sharply on the positive trade talks between U.S. and China. At Friday's closing bell, the yellow metal was up 70 cents at $1,201, silver shed just 3 cents, finishing near break-even at $1,414, while the XAU precious metal shares looked solid, off just slightly at $63.36. Black gold picked up $1.24, 2%, finishing at $69 as West Texas looked solid despite news that the weekly U.S. Baker Hughes rig count increased fractionally today. And the Bitcoin ETF GBTC picked up a nice solid 21 cents, finishing at $8.55, looking solid on a technical basis as well. The top story moving the precious metals sector this week. Gold climbed amid the weak dollar for its first positive close in three. The dollar hit a six-week low on Thursday, despite expectations of a quarter-point rate hike at the end of this month, where the Fed funds futures suggest a 97% odds of an increase to 2% in the overnight lending rate, and another rate hike, about a 77% probability, in December. However, Wednesday, shortly after the release of the Federal Reserve's beige book, we see the domestic economy increased at a moderate pace, and that suggests that Fed policymakers can maybe relax a bit on their rate hikes. Elsewhere, news that Washington had invited officials from China to restart their trade talks was viewed as a positive sign and much-needed diplomacy. Negotiations are key now to next week's economic numbers, which might stall, at least in China, as the impact of tariffs start to take effect. Turning to domestic economic news, there were signals on Wednesday and early Thursday. Import prices posted the largest decline in 18 months, according to the Labor Department, and export prices were also down, but still up, both on an annual basis. Meanwhile, data showed that U.S. industrial production rose by the better-than-expected last month. That's the third monthly increase, and consumer sentiment also up a bit last month. In related news, retail sales also inched 0.1% last month, according to the Commerce Department, but it was still a little below economists' forecasts. When auto and gasoline sales were removed, sales actually declined slightly. Bottom line on precious metals. The U.S. dollar pullback gave us some support this week, as well as U.S. shares, all of which benefited from the positive trade talks. The XAU really looks solid here from a technical perspective, so when we add in the upcoming holiday buying season, Maybe things will perk up in the weeks ahead. Moving on to the Wall Street Report, visibility virtually unlimited over the New York Stock Exchange as the nearly three-month rally in U.S. shares continued. The Dow Jones added fractionally, up 234 points, about 1%, finishing at 26,155 with Boeing, ticker BA, leading the charge up 1%. The S&P 500 also added 33, up to 2904, while the NASDAQ picked up 108, 1.4% at 8,010, 3,000 points above the 2,000 peak. Meanwhile, investors revealed some relief on Friday as Hurricane Florence was severe but did little to dissuade investors. Home Depot picked up 0.1%, while United Rentals jumped 1%. Advanced Micro Devices, AMD, also led an early rally, up nearly 3.5%, its sixth weekly advance. And an interesting China IPO, NIO, spiked 10%. That's 100% above its IPO price. It's touted as the Tesla of China, a maker of luxury electronic vehicles. And Dave & Buster's, ticker PLAY, leaped almost 3%. Topping second quarter expectations. Adobe, ticker ADBE, also gained 2.5% on positive third quarter earnings results. And Ireland-based drug maker Shire, ticker SHPG, added more than 2% as regulators in China cleared the company's takeover by Japan-based pharmaceutical heavyweight Takeda. The $62 billion deal is viewed as the largest made by a Japanese company. U.S. shares, bottom line. Well, our 7 indicator USA Today Greed to Fear Index pendulum moved back up just slightly into the greedy category. Still plenty of room, though, for price growth. So amid the positive trade talks, I don't see much on the horizon that should keep shares under posting new record price highs in the coming weeks and months ahead. Coming up after the break, more Gold Seek. Welcome back, Peter Schiff.
Well, thanks for welcoming me back.
You know, the president's comments last week, he's not happy with the Fed. I think that takes some nerve to actually speak out against the Fed. We haven't seen too many of our presidents have the guts to pull that off. He wants to see a weaker dollar and is not happy at all with the current Fed chairman, Jerome Powell's hike ideas.
Well, first of all, I mean, he appointed Powell. So although he says that he thought he would be a looser money guy than he turns out to be, although we'll see. My feeling is when push comes to shove, he's going to be pretty much of a dove when it comes to monetary policy. But, you know, I like criticizing the Fed, but Trump is criticizing the Fed for the wrong reasons. When he was a candidate, he was critical of the Fed for the right reasons. He criticized the Fed for keeping interest rates too low, to artificially prop up the economy, to inflate the stock market bubble, to help Obama. And he was right. But now he's upset that the Fed is not doing more to help him. So he actually wants the Fed to do exactly what he was critical of the Fed of doing under Obama when he was promising to drain the swamp and change things. And so he just wants to continue the phony bubble blowing. And I think, you know, he's going to get his wish, because as the U.S. economy weakens, the Fed is going to be back up to its tricks. In fact, if you look at the most recent statements coming out of Jackson Hole, both by Powell and other FOMC members, they're basically saying that they're almost finished normalizing rates, meaning that normal rates are now much lower than they were before, that maybe there's two or three more rate hikes left total, if that. And the Fed also said that they're going to err on allowing inflation to break out, and then they're confident that if that happens, they'll just be able to rein it back in again. But they're not going to be preemptive, according to the Fed. They're not going to act in anticipation of a breakout of inflation. They're only going to react if inflation, in fact, breaks out. So in other words, they're going to let the inflation genie out of the bottle because they're confident they can put it right back in.
You know, history doesn't give much support for that thesis at all, does it? I mean, if we look at the 1980s, it took virtually everything we had to contain inflation, and we don't have that wiggle room today, do we? The Fed doesn't have it.
Right. No, we don't. I mean, Powell said that the Fed would do everything, whatever it takes, to control inflation if it breaks out, and that's easier said than done, because I don't think they'll do whatever it takes, because, you know, that would destroy the entire economy, right? That we would die from the cure because it would collapse the entire banking system. It would force the government into default because we cannot handle the type of rate hikes that would be required to reverse the inflation. So I think it's all bark and no bite. And, you know, the markets are going to figure this out, and Trump's going to get his wish. We're going to get a weak dollar, except it's going to be a lot weaker than he wants. And it's going to be very problematic because it's going to be sending consumer prices much higher, long-term interest rates much higher, and I think it's going to, you know, end in a crisis.
If we time travel back to those 1970s, could you fathom the impact on one of the strongest economic drivers of this economy, the housing sector? And as I recall it, they bumped rates up close to 20%. I mean, that would just simply crater housing and all the sectors that support.
Mortgages back in the 80s were at like 14%, I think, you know, 15% mortgages. You know, it was a big deal when they got back below 10%. But clearly, you know, that's impossible for people to afford. I mean, even if mortgage rates went back to 8%, which is not even historically high. I mean, before the financial crisis, you know, even prior to the housing bubble, right, you know, in the 90s, mortgages, that's about where they were. You know, so if mortgage rates went back to 8%, nobody could afford to buy a home. I mean, you know, at the current prices, I mean, prices would have to collapse. Sure. I mean, if prices got cut in half, then people could afford higher mortgage rates because they would have smaller mortgages. But in order to sustain these inflated, you know, bubble prices, it requires, you know, rock bottom mortgage rates. And all that goes away if the Fed has to rein in inflation.
Again, look back at the 70s. I mean, we were a manufacturing superpower. And just since the year 2000 alone, we've lost something like 500,000 high-paying manufacturing jobs per year.
We were still running trade surpluses in the 70s and much of the 80s. And, you know, today the deficit just came out. It was the biggest jump in over 3 years in 1 month. Our exports went down and our imports went up. It's the biggest jump, I said, since Trump's been president. The trade picture is getting worse, despite all the tariffs.
Over to the precious metals market, I mean, clearly we had a very difficult 2 months caught. We're seeing some signs of capitulation and some strength, at least in silver and gold last week. The XAU was oversold. Do you think that this could be the bottom? Are the bulls going to regain control?
Yeah, well, you know, we had a run below 1,200. We got down, I think one night we got down in, you know, I don't know if we ever got into the 1260s, but we were definitely in the 1270s. I mean, 1170s, rather. We got down into like 1170s, but then we recovered back up to around 1210. I mean, now maybe around 1205. So we're back above the 1200 handle. So we got a lot of shorts in the market now. I mean, for the first time, I think hedge funds got net short since 2001. And we all know what happened there. I mean, that was the beginning of the huge run from under 300 to almost 2,000. You know, we have a record amount of speculators shorting gold. I think they're actually going to be trapped and looking to cover at higher prices. The dollar is, you know, starting to weaken. Dollar index almost got up to 97, 96, 90-something, and now we're 94.5. We actually got below 94.5, and so we're turning back down. And if, you know, traders start to price in an easier Fed, which I think they should be doing, especially after Powell's comments and other comments. And look, the economic data is not strong. I mean, the economic surprise index, which is a measure of how much the economic data surprises the markets, either to the high side or to the low side. And right now, we're at a 14-year low as far as economic data disappointing what has been expected. So we have high hopes for the economy. But the data just doesn't bear it out. Everybody thinks things are going to be great because you got Donald Trump out there saying we've got the greatest economy in American history, and that couldn't be farther from the truth, but you have a lot of the public believing it. Look at the consumer confidence numbers today at, you know, generational highs. So people are optimistic that things are getting better, even though there's no real proof that they are. And in fact, I think the proof is that they're not because we're simply on a sugar high. We got some tax cuts that we paid for by making the huge deficits even bigger. And we increase government spending as we cut taxes.
But turn to U.S. equities. I mean, if you look at the bull market of, let's say, the year 2001 to 2012 in the yellow metal, I mean, it tended to coincide with a mostly sluggish U.S. equities and shares market. Do you think that the precious metals can this time rally along with equities, which look strong despite the overvaluation of 23 S&P price-to-earnings ratio?
If the stock market starts moving up because of a weaker dollar, because there is the expectation that the Fed is going to be less restrictive than people once believed, meaning that, people think that they're going to take their foot off the brake or let the economy run, and people interpret that as meaning, oh, it's going to be a stronger economy, it's going to push the recession further back, and what we're going to have is more inflation than we thought. We're going to have more growth, more inflation, and an easier Fed and a weaker dollar in that environment, and then commodity prices are going to be strong. That would be an environment where you would think that gold stocks could go up along with the stock market. But then when stock investors began to feel that we're getting the inflation, that part we're going to get, but we're not going to get all the extra growth, maybe we're going to have stagflation where the earnings are not going to be there and the economy is going to weaken and corporate profits are going to fall and we're going to have stagflation, then that's where gold and the markets can diverge, whereas gold can keep rising and the markets can roll over. And, of course, you know, that is the scenario that I ultimately think we're headed for.
Looking at the S&P's price-to-earnings ratio of about 24, that's way over the traditional 15 to 17 P.E. ratio.
Sure. And so obviously valuations can come down, especially if long-term interest rates start to rise, despite the Fed's not raising short rates. If the yield curve starts to steepen, that could be a big problem for equities. They're this expensive.
I'd like your thoughts on the gold-to-silver ratio. I mean, clearly, AG has touched and even exceeded 80 on that ratio for some time, and the more traditional is, let's say, 10 to 16 on it. Do you see silver as a relative valuation?
Well, yeah, I mean, and that's been the case for years. And, you know, there's obviously a lot of people that have been where they're long silver and short gold, and that's been a losing trade. I mean, the people who are on the opposite side of that trade have been making money. But at some point, you know, when the metals break out, and whenever that is, silver's going to run, and it's going to run more than gold. I mean, so when you're in a bear market in the metals, which we've kind of been, although I don't think we're in a bear market anymore, because I think gold bottomed out at 1050 in December 2015. So I think we're back in a bull market now, but it's kind of like a stealth, quiet bull market. It's kind of like the beginning phases, you know, where we had some shorts covering, and now we even have some new shorts in the market. You know, I don't think we're not continuing lower, but I think we're just building the base to really launch the next leg of the bull market. You know, I think see all-time highs, new all-time highs.
You expect silver to outperform gold as it did?
Yeah, once we start to break out, I mean, maybe it's going to take gold, you know, above 1400 or something. So it clearly, you know, gets away from all this overhead resistance. And then, you know, we get silver starting to run, get it back up above, you know, 20 bucks or something. Then, you know, it can really start to move relative to gold, gain back a lot of the ground that it lost.
There's been a lot of talk calling for the potential for an inversion in the yield curve. That tends to precede economic slowdowns, which could also be, you know, a headwind for the yellow metal and AG and related shares.
Yet we're going to get a recession whether or not the yield curve inverts. And clearly, if it does invert, I mean, obviously it shows that bond traders believe that a recession is coming. It's not that reversing the inverting yield curve is what causes the recession. It's simply the markets correctly anticipating the recession because they're already bidding up bond prices in anticipation that the Fed is going to reverse course and start lowering rates. But I don't think we need an inverting curve to have a recession. And in fact, if I'm right, if we end up with stagflation, you would expect the yield curve to be steepening in the recession because interest rates in stagflation, long-term interest rates should be rising and not falling. And that's why that's such a deadly combination. When the Federal Reserve did the stress test recently on all the banks, assumed even in the most adverse scenario, it assumed that long-term interest rates don't rise. Because in the worst-case scenario that the Fed can imagine, inflation stays below 2%. They didn't bother to stress test an environment where inflation actually breaks out to 4 or 5% and long-term interest rates go up. I mean, I think they're scared to actually sample that, to model that, because it would show a complete economic implosion. So they just pretend that it can't even happen. And so all their stress tests are focused on low inflation and falling interest rates rather than rising inflation and rising interest rates.
Some of this economic boost we've seen in recent months could be due to the fact that the transportation sector and other manufacturers have had to rush to stockpile up on strategic goods and, you know, other items absolutely necessary and critical for their working processes day to day. And so the transportation sector remains red hot, and imports and whatnot and exports are very solid now because people are essentially front running the tariffs and the other taxes that are related.
That seems to make sense intuitively that that would be happening, that if you believe that, you know, a lot of your components that you need were going to be subject to tariffs, then you would tend to, you know, stock up on some inventory and import a lot of what you think you're going to need in advance of those tariffs so that you can get them before the tariffs take effect. And so if that isn't the case, then obviously we're simply pulling forward some of the GDP growth from the future into the present. And so what that means, you know, regardless of whether the tariffs are implemented or not, I mean, obviously if the tariffs are never implemented, well, you know, people just bought up in advance, and so they'll just use what they own. But even if the tariffs are implemented, that just means that the effect on businesses for the cost will be delayed somewhat because they would have imported a lot of stuff before. But they may already start hiking prices on consumers because they probably would start pricing their goods based on replacement costs, not based on what they paid for their, you know, components in the past, but what it would cost to replace them now that the tariffs are in place. But either way, you would expect that this effect would be to accelerate some of the GDP into the present. And so that might have been part of the reason why we had that 4.1% print in the second quarter. And it may be one of the reasons that Q3 GDP ends up being higher than would otherwise be the case. But the backside of that is all of a sudden we're going to start to get some really, really weak quarters because a lot of the activity had already been pulled forward. Meanwhile, everybody was excited about it, like, oh, wow, this is fantastic. We've got all this growth, when we didn't have any extra growth to try to minimize the impact of the tariffs.
Okay, moving on to the crude oil market. You know, clearly this is the economic engine, or at least it's an important pipeline, if you will, for the economy. Relatively high prices lately. I mean, well off the lows. At what threshold do you see that potentially putting the brakes on the economic output?
Yeah, Trump knows that because, you know, when oil was making its highs, he was tweeting out about, you know, the OPEC nations and how this was unfair, and they were, like, you know, jacking up oil prices, and we got to, you know, look into that, you know, like we should sanction them or something or stop defending them. So I think Trump was cognizant of the risks that rising oil prices pose to the economy. And I think oil prices are going to head much higher when the dollar turns decisively lower. I mean, the dollar got bit up by a lot of speculators who believed that we would win the trade war and somehow the tariffs would be beneficial for the dollar and hurt other economies more than the U.S. And, of course, the idea that the Fed was going to keep on hiking. And now that I think the Fed is starting to diminish expectations for 2019, as it becomes more obvious that, you know, we're not going to win the trade war. I mean, that's just not going to happen. If anybody loses, it's the U.S. because we've got the most to lose, contrary to what Trump says. So I think when the dollar starts to roll over, then you're going to really see some upward pressure on oil prices. I mean, the fact that oil prices have been so strong with all the problems happening in the emerging market currencies with the strength of the dollar, the fact that oil prices have stayed as firm as they have just shows you how much strength is underlying this market. And once the dollar starts to turn, we're going to see much, much higher crude oil prices. And, yeah, that's just going to be another big problem. If you have to, you know, devote more of your paycheck to gas, well, you got less left over for other things.
No, exactly. I mean, we're seeing studies today, pretty reliable sources indicating that the typical middle-class American is earning roughly the same dollar amount, meaning not adjusted for inflation, as 30 years ago. So you can imagine with the, you know, the relative disadvantage of inflation and purchasing power, they're struggling.
Of course, when the government calculates the inflation rate, I mean, they doctor it all up. So, you know, if you actually look at the real increase in what things cost people, yeah, I mean, they're getting killed. That's why I was just reading an article. I think the median household of Americans, I think their total savings was something like less than 1,000 or less than 1,500 bucks. And that includes, you know, people in their 50s and 60s that are supposedly saving for their retirement. So, you know, you have so many families that have hardly anything. And I think it was something like 25% of households have saved zero. I mean, they have nothing. They probably have negative net worths because not only do they have no savings, but they have credit card debt or student loans or, you know, an auto loan or something like that.
Do you buy the idea that eventually it may lead to sort of need for universal income?
I mean, the only reason that you can argue that you might need it is because the welfare state is so destructive to incentives that universal basic income might be a better way to dole out welfare. The concept being that, hey, everybody gets a set amount of money and you don't lose it if you go out and get a job and improve your life. I mean, the problem with the current welfare system is that the tax rate on going from welfare to work on a marginal rate is probably the highest marginal rate out there, because not only do you begin paying payroll taxes, but you lose all your welfare benefits, which is 100% tax on your benefits. But even better than basic income might be just a way to phase out welfare, and, you know, so it's not like cold turkey or something. But personally, I'd just rather eliminate welfare, and that solves the problem. Coming up with a new entitlement to basic income could be just a whole can of worms that we don't want to open, because the feeling would be that that basic income will ultimately get so high, a lot of people are just going to say, hey, that's for me. That basic income is all I need. I don't want to work. Can't have a lot of people deciding, you know, to do that.
Backtrack to Scotland, where the whole idea of workhouses and helping people who simply cannot help themselves, and I'm sure you'd agree, there needs to be some kind of safety net in place, some kind of system there.
I mean, I think that individuals giving privately their own donations are likely to actually help people who truly need help. The problem is, when it comes to government, everybody can game the system. So in government, you have all sorts of fraud. People are getting welfare and benefits who don't really need it, who could be fine without it, but they're able to con the government because it's the government. But private individuals are going to be much more concerned about making sure that their hard-earned money is being put to good use and not, you know, being scammed. But the people that are running these welfare departments, none of it is their money.
On cryptos, I know you really haven't been a big proponent there. Nevertheless, we have seen Ethereum, you know, the number two crypto, tank down to 75% its peak value. That is in dollar terms, not Bitcoin terms. And Bitcoin has now retested that 5,700 to 6,000 support several times. Do you think we could see a rally here? Is the worst behind us, or what do you think?
Well, the worst is certainly not behind us. I mean, if you're long. But yeah, we are back above 7,000 right now. I think part of this could be, you know, the big puff piece that CNBC did on this documentary, which I thought was lousy. It was, again, you know, CNBC has been one of the major touters and promoters of crypto. I saw a lot of the crypto stocks in the last couple of days. Some of these things are up 30, 40%. They had been beaten down 90, 95%. All of a sudden, they've gotten to life. So there is some speculation that the lows are in and, you know, that we're going to rally into the end of the year. My gut feeling is that, you know, we're going to break that support, that we built a lot of support just below 6,000, low risk, high reward trade, you know, buying in here. But I don't think we actually saw enough selling. I don't think we saw any real panic or capitulation from the long-term holders. We need a much bigger down move in order for that to happen. So I do think we get a big break, you know, below 6,000 in Bitcoin. I think all the other altcoins go down. I think we got to get the market cap back down around 100 billion total. I mean, right now it's about 225, 230 billion. So we get down to 100 billion or a little bit below, and we get some real panic selling. We get to see Bitcoin down maybe 2,000, 3,000 bucks in a single day, get to see some panic. Then maybe we can have a rally, you know, off of there that might, but, you know, I tend to think that the highs are in. You know, that 20,000 was the high, that was the mania. And so at some point, the bottom's going to drop out of the market and these things are going to zero out. I mean, they may not get all the way to zero because they'll be like lottery tickets for a while. I think they're going a lot lower. If I was in the cryptos, I would be selling into any rally and I'd be buying some silver. Go to goldmoney.com because you can actually take your Bitcoin and your Ether and you can turn it into gold and silver.
I'd like your thoughts on everybody maybe add just a tiny modicum, 1 to 5% to their portfolios to lower that beta and boost their alpha.
Yeah, I mean, look, people should be buying physical gold. I mean, obviously, shiftgold.com is the best place to buy it. I mean, and sales have been very weak all over the gold world, which is another great contrarian indicator.
Thanks so much.
Okay.
My featured guest today, Arch Crawford, combines technical analysis with planetary alignments to identify and divine patterns in the financial markets for over four decades. Welcome back, Arch Crawford.
Thank you.
So at least you're not bracing for 83-foot waves. That's currently what Hurricane Florence, way out at sea, it's been downgraded to a Category 330-mile-an-hour winds. I'm sure you know that South Carolina, North Carolina, and parts of Virginia are bracing for this hurricane.
Brother's cottage is in Wrightsville.
Not good. Last year, we were hit by Harvey, and it knocked out power for 4 days and really did massive damage. And here's the irony here. The latest trajectory forecast projections by their the weather supercomputers indicate a direct hit right over this city again.
Rush has just said that depending on how many days, the 4 or 5 day, 4 to 6 day projections almost never work out.
That is true. When you're dealing with any chaotic system called initial conditions in any chaotic system, Henri Poincaré, French mathematician, with a solution, and he said there's essentially no solution, the three-body problem. Well, I'm not sure I agree with that, but I do believe that even our computers today struggle with these highly chaotic systems. Obviously, a hurricane falls into the category of the term turbulence.
Piece on it a while back when, I think it was last year, when a couple of hurricanes were getting ready to hit different places, and the sunspots went a little nuts, and there were Earth's electromagnetic field went up to 7 out of 9.
Wow.
And right as the hurricanes were at max. So I'm saying a lot of it is solar, and they won't dare mention that because it's not in the agenda.
Looks like there's two tropical storms right behind Hurricane Florence. And as you said correctly, I think we're looking for trouble. They're calling it extremely dangerous. And I think it's mostly the size, not the speed. It's expected to hit the Tar Heel State quite soon.
Thursday night?
Yeah, they're saying as soon as Thursday night. It looks like Sunday, Monday for it to get to the mountains. It's bouncing between category 3 and 4. I think it was slightly downgraded. Nevertheless, it's going to be ferocious and it's going to catch a lot of people off guard.
In 1954, Hazel came right up the middle of the state, Raleigh, Durham, and hit Oxford. And my mother and I were sitting there looking out the front window at the huge chunks of oak trees falling over, and a couple of the whole oak trees across the street went over. 145.
15 years before my time, but Puerto Rico earlier in the year, that's still a disaster there. In recent memory, about a decade ago, we had Katrina, which we're still feeling the impact of. They're still rebuilding in Louisiana and much of that region. Over 100,000, I believe, FEMA trailers that were distributed, they had to recall them all because of high levels of formaldehyde. Anything above the 8 parts per million really gets dangerous to the human body, 12 to 15 times the recommended maximum formaldehyde. So people were literally being embalmed in their FEMA trailers. So they destroyed them all, right? Wrong. FEMA simply recalled them and sold them into the general public. So now there are tens of thousands of FEMA trailers all over the United States, not just the South. Anyone who accepts a FEMA trailer, be sure and buy a cheap little indicator. You can find the VIN numbers, by the way, on those trailers. If you look at the front on the metal, the VIN number is stamped on it, and you can run that through the national database. Last week was an interesting week in that simply every market went down. The dollar, precious metals, U.S. equities for the most part struggled. Even short-term and long-term U.S. Treasury bills and notes did poorly.
All I can say is that the NASDAQ 100 or the NASDAQ in general tend to lead both up and down. And the last week and a half or so, they've been leading on the downside, which is not a good sign for markets. Also, the gold is up sharply this morning. I don't know that's usually not good for the market either. But the odd thing, I'm looking at the trend, you know, the trading index, minute by minute. And it was in a very tight range from 10:30 to 11. It was like from 0.90 to 0.96. And then it went for the next hour and a half between 65.65 and 0.90. And then the last from 1:30 to 2:30 Eastern, it's been in a like a 4 or 5 tick range. And I find that suggestive of plunge protection team, maybe. They're worried about, maybe, is the hurricane that big a deal for the market? I wouldn't think so.
Usually the hurricane situation mostly impacted the petroleum markets, but that was the Gulf because Houston, the refineries between Houston and New Orleans, there's so many. The East Coast, as you know, is an oil production free zone still, the Atlantic. You did touch on precious metals. The dollar rally hit some serious resistance in recent weeks.
The dollar index, which is against our main trading partner, is actually hitting a new low for September today. It's down 46 cents at 94.77, but it is also, if it closes here, it'll be below, it's below the 50-day rising moving average. It's running into a little bit of a trouble today. Gold is up sharply, the dollar is down sharply, and I don't know if those trends will continue or not, because they are both still within certain range patterns.
I'd like to move on then to news from Washington of the potential for $267 billion tariffs against China. First it was $200, now they're talking $267 billion, roughly 40% imports from China. Obviously, we're just antagonizing our top trading partners, especially when we see so many ominous economic clouds on the horizon. I mean, by now, most people know the Bolivar in Venezuela is a completely defunct currency, 1,000,000% inflation, at least at last check. And then next door, Argentina is now struggling with their peso, bracing for a 60% collapse, and the Venezuelan president and the first lady are now promoting gold-backed certificates to help their citizens with inflation. But I think it's a little late, don't you, Arch? Because, you know, by the time inflation hits 1,000,000%, people have spent all their bolivars trying to just survive. They don't have any money left to buy gold-backed certificates.
Well, certainly not the great mass of people there.
How long before something like this impacts the U.S.?
We'll find out, won't we? But projecting that is a little bit difficult. And if the truth is that the dollar has been eroded to over 96% since the Federal Reserve came in in 1913. It's their business to inflate our current zero, I guess.
Certainly seems to be the case. And, you know, we will have no Fed increase, 99.8% odds of a rate hike in September, and then a 77% odds of probability at the Fed funds futures in December. So we're going to skip November. In other words, we're going to have another bump up this month and then again at Christmas time. And then it looks like one or two more next year, then they hopefully will wrap up this cycle. Do you expect then for precious metals to discount much of this?
Well, it's doing it today, but I don't know if we're going to get further follow through. It's bounced up here several times and has not exceeded 1220. And back August a year ago, it got up to about 36 and change, I believe it was. So that's, you know, 1236 and change. But it hadn't been able to break through in any kind of major way yet. So I'm waiting to see if it can do that. I expect it sometime, but I wrote 2 or 3 months ago that if it broke this minor uptrend line, then I would be concerned about it. And then if it broke the major uptrend line, the longer term uptrend line, then I would certainly leave it alone until things stabilize. And then it's been tanking on down to the 1190s, and it a little while ago it broke down to the top of the next trading range at 1167.10, I think was the low on the current contract month.
So to the cryptos, probably don't watch it too closely, but Ethereum is literally in a free fall. I've been watching it drop from 0.042 a Bitcoin to recently 0.027 down to 170. Pretty hefty drop from $1,300. And it looks to me like it could drop to 100 to 120 at least before wrapping up here. Any thoughts on Bitcoin and cryptos?
Well, what I said in the September 4th letter is it made its most recent high July 24th at 83.97.60. It was the fourth lower high since December 17th top. The important difference to report is we finally have a higher low. Along with the last lower high, the chart is beginning to form a triangle that is narrowing pattern, which is common to turning points. This may be considered enormously encouraging, but only if we get a breakout to a higher high above that July 24 and then continue the technically healthier with a price level registering above the May 5th high of 98.20. This is not a highly complex analysis, but it is the simplest way to define a trend as bullish or bearish. We want to see higher highs, higher lows to confirm the uptrend, which is not yet the case. How will worst 2 months in stocks affect Bitcoin, you know, September and October?
With Bitcoin, we're obviously in a massive trading range pattern, what we'd call a complex head and shoulders. If 57 to 6,000 support fails, I would expect another harrowing drop of at least 50%. I mean, within hours to days.
I've seen that. I've noticed that.
I say on average it moves at sixfold the stock market.
I was looking for a day in December that looked like a high in markets, and I said it could be stock and commodities, it could be currencies, it could be anything. And it was the top day in Bitcoin, December 17th.
If we do break that 5,700 in any meaningful way, I think that you could see 48 or even lower. I mean, it could see 900 would be on the extreme level, and even 50 or lower on Ethereum. So I would advise people to be really cautious here. Those of us who are Bitcoin fans, I'm rooting for Bitcoin to hold 5,700. If that 57 fails, I wouldn't want to hold anything but U.S. dollars. What I've noticed is there's been a massive rush out of Ethereum and Bitcoin Cash, these are the top ones on Coinbase, into Bitcoin, which seems to have been holding up Bitcoin above its support. If swapping the currency pair between Bitcoin and Ethereum and the currency pair between Bitcoin and Bitcoin Cash has been very weak, which means they're swapping out of one for the other. But I think it's crunch time. If people say, wait a minute, I'm even nervous about Bitcoin. Bitcoin can't hold this support, then all those people who switched out of the altcoins into Bitcoin will unanimously say, get me to the exits. Get me to the U.S. dollar.
Yes, if it breaks that lower low, short it or whatever. I think it's acting better than I've seen it all the way since the top.
Any other market comments before we wrap up today?
Well, we are in the worst 2 months. Historically of the seasonal period, so we could still run into some pretty heavy difficulty before the end of October, but the October has the most bottoms denoted. I would look for a significant low end of October.
It's interesting you'd say that, because you may have noticed on Tuesday, September 11th, that ominous date, it was one of the better days for the markets.
Yes, remember too that I predicted that, I said that the United States will be at war around the weekend of the 7th to 8th of September 2001 in the newsletter.
Hat tip for that. I remember noticing that we'd been in a sharp downturn, but I had just discovered Trendfall just before September 11th. And I thought, you know, I don't want to be long here. Typical person's buying because it's cheaper, but trend followers say this is going to be a potentially dangerous time. And then the markets were closed for a week after 9/11.
And the week after that, when they reopened, it was the worst week since the fall of France.
And you might recall that it led to one of the most spectacular rallies in the next few days once that cleared out. But why don't you tell people more, please, about Crawford Perspectives?
You want to find us. We've been number one in various markets over there. I don't know anyone that's had a more spectacular long 30 to 40-year record. Google Arch Crawford is the easiest way to find it. Or if you want to type out Crawford Perspectives at earthlink.net, and go ahead and do that. But our phone number is on our website, and a lot of the interesting information is also there. It's www.crawfordperspectives.com. Look forward to hearing from you. People who are listening to you, I will be glad to send the September issue immediately.
All right. Thank you so much, Arch Crawford.
Thank you.
GoldSeek.com Radio. On September 12, 2018, President Trump issued an executive order. Do you know about it? Have you read it? If you're a consumer of mainstream media news, chances are you haven't heard about it, or possibly have just heard a glossed-over soundbite, most likely misrepresenting what the executive order actually says. The executive order is titled Executive Order on Imposing Certain Sanctions in the Event of Foreign Interference in a United States Election. Simply type into a search engine Executive Order September 12, 2018, and you'll find a link to the WhiteHouse.gov archive of official executive orders, which I highly suggest bookmarking and reading from time to time. This executive order is much like the executive order issued by the president late last year on human trafficking, which essentially allows the government to go after and sanction the property, assets, and finances of any person anywhere on the planet who is found to have violated the terms of the executive order. And if you read the fine print at the end of the executive order, it says the term person means an individual or entity. And then it says the term entity means a partnership, association, trust, joint venture, corporation, group, subgroup, or other organization. And it's not just foreign. It's any person or entity right here in the United States as well. Hello, Google, Facebook, Twitter, CNN, and others. To see how it's all connected, I suggest reading the executive order over a nice cup of coffee or tea. Enforcement of this executive order may not garner a lot of publicity, because enforcement, it appears, will be done in a stealth and quiet manner, not through the FBI or DOJ, but through the Treasury Department. That's right, the Treasury Department. If you are unfamiliar with this significant investigative and enforcement power of the U.S. Treasury, you've been relying far too much on mainstream media to connect the dots for you about what's really happening in the world. This executive order is a game changer. While most everyone is busy riding the emotional roller coaster of mainstream media, who tries desperately, day after day, to convince the public about what they think we should believe is important, this is where the real action is taking place. And until next time, this is Robert Ian with ConquerChange.com. Thanks, Chris.
Okay, Robert, thanks for another excellent installment. Well, that wraps up this week's GoldSeek.com radio episode. For two new big guests, be sure to check out next week's show. Until we talk to you again, have a great week.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.
Thank you.